I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that, they're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even at commentary. Nobody can touch me.
World, and this is a brand new episode of CMJU's Wrestling Reviews. I'm, of course, your host, and joining me tonight is Mean Gene. No, not Oakland. I'm talking about the other Gene from Shaft Plus.
How's it going? I can't do an Oakland impression. I can't. I'm not even gonna like try.
Have you been watching Legend House?
No. Sorry, I just don't like reality TV. I'm not watching Legends House for the same reason I'm not watching Total Divas.
I'll understand that. So it has been entertaining. Or as Matty J once put it, the match of the year was Roddy Piper versus a blender.
Oh, that's a Meltzer 5-star if I ever heard.
That and them LARPing. I couldn't stop laughing watching that.
I saw that in the preview that they were LARPing, like in that trailer they WWE was showing for like 3 months.
Yeah.
Of them LARPing. And I'm sitting there going, okay, that might be one I have to watch because it just looks so ridiculous.
It's at least worth a watch. I'm not saying watch the entire season, but it's worth watching maybe, you know, the first episode and that episode. Don't watch the episode where they go to Las Vegas and they get put in the Chippendale show.
Yeah,
because it'll scar you for life.
That was also in the preview. I'm like, what were they thinking?
They were WWE. They think, oh, this will be good for a joke. No, it won't.
No, it won't. You're only embarrassing, you know, 8 or 9 Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
Most of them, I actually give a crap about them not being embarrassed if I could help it. I feel bad for, let's see, who do I feel bad for? I feel bad for Piper. I feel bad for Oakland. I really feel bad for Finkel.
Mm-hmm.
Who else? I sort of feel bad for Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
I feel
sorry for
Hillbilly Jim, because he's actually pretty cool. On the show, he seems like a very mellow guy.
You'd have to be if you had that guy's like career. I feel bad. He should have had a better career.
I think we kind of agree that the two guys we really don't feel bad for is Jimmy Hart and Tony Atlas.
Yeah. Well, definitely Tony Atlas. Tony Atlas comes off as like a jerk everywhere. This is a guy who's annoyed CM Punk, so, you know, there you go.
That says something. There's Pat Patterson's in there, too.
Oh, my God. Actually, if anyone you should feel sorry for in Legends House, it's Pat Patterson. This is a guy who was paraded out in the Attitude Era, first Intercontinental Champion. And the guy was paraded out in the Attitude Era with Jerry Briscoe as Vince McMahon stooges. They were stooges. They had evening gown matches.
A hardcore evening gown match at King of the Ring, and I know that because I was looking over the King of the Ring pay-per-views, which I'm going to be watching all of next month.
And then the skid mark. My God! That is going to be one guy who should, like, not have to do anything like this ever.
I admit, I do feel bad for Pat Patterson, even though I severely disagree with his opinions on hardcore wrestling.
No, I agree with that, but I still feel bad for the... This guy paid his dues and earned his stripes with the whole Attitude Era. He doesn't have to do this. Get another legend in there to embarrass themselves.
I mean, Larry Zbysko, I know, is signed to a WWE Legends contract as of April 2013. Why can't you get him in there?
Well, the problem is, like, a lot of the guys who work for WWE in the back who are semi-legendary, I can't think of any, like, I would want to subject Legends House to.
That's why I said Larry Zbysko.
That's about all you can do. Like, like I would wish that on the New Age Outlaw, the Middle Age Outlaws. I wouldn't wish that on Double A Arn Anderson. Oh, I got somebody. You know who you throw back there? You throw in the Nature Boy. He needs money. Woo!
They'll never do that to the Nature Boy.
No, they'll never do that to Ric Flair. He's too protected.
Yeah, too protected. Him and Bret Hart.
Well, speaking of that, I feel like you want to talk about NXT TakeOver.
Yeah, speaking of that, great segue, Gene.
That's why I get paid the big money.
That's why you're the best color commentary man in the business. Yeah, NXT TakeOver had happened last Thursday night, of course, which is part of the reason I want Gene on this week's episode, because, you know, from my perspective, you know, he is the NXT guy, so anytime there's an NXT pay-per-view, I'm going to be, hey, Gene, want to talk about it?
Well, according to the game, you're going to be having me on every quarter.
At the very least, yeah, that was from the, that was also part of the conference call he did. Where Meltzer looked kind of foolish, and the Fallout, which was actually really good. I also want to talk about the pre-show and post-show.
Oh, go ahead. I actually didn't watch the pre-show and post-show.
So they do the pre-show. It looked pre-taped, but that's fine. The pre-show panel consisted of Renee Young,
okay.
Christian,
all right,
and Paul Heyman.
Oh God.
I think this is the first time in history where I think Paul Heyman is the best thing about a show. I've never been a full-on Paul Heyman guy, but if there was any reason to watch the pre-show and post-show for TakeOver, it was Paul freaking Heyman.
Well, he was on the pre-show for Arrival as well.
Yeah, he was, but he stole it this time. he looked kind of annoyed and... You know, in the motions during Arrival's pre-show. For TakeOver, he took over that show. He just took over the pre- and post-show. They didn't have him, like, go in the audience. They had him being Paul Heyman, like, actual Paul Heyman. The way he would talk about NXT reminded you of how he would talk about ECW.
Oh, yeah.
No, just without the screechy, loud Paul Heyman voice.
And without the, you know... My client Brock Lesnar broke the Undertaker.
He only said it twice.
Only twice? Wow, we're doing
once
record.
On the pre-show, once on the post-show, and the second time was actually it was awesome. He had a quip for everything. Like, they played an interview, Michael Cole, you know how he does those forums, which the forum interviews with Triple H?
Yeah.
Did one of those with Natty and Tyson Kidd.
Yeah.
And Cole is digging into them. Like, attacking them. Cole, like, every 5 seconds, like, Natalya, why are you answering for Tyson? I asked Tyson a question. And he's just digging into him. They come back from the clip. Paul Heyman says, coming this fall on the WWE Network, marriage counseling with Michael Cole. Followed by divorce court. With Michael Cole. I fell out of my couch laughing. It took me a good 2 minutes to recover. from that.
Oh, I'm gonna have to go back and watch that then.
And there is stuff he digs into Natty and Tyson even more than Cole did. But they interviewed a lot of people on the post show, including Triple H. But when it comes up to Natalya's turn, Charlotte comes up too, and then Charlotte goes to leave, but Natalya's still there. Paul Heyman is in that Paul Heyman manager tone. It's like, hit her now, hit her from back, hit her now. And then she turns around at Paul and goes, Paul, hearts play fair. And then Paul turns to her and says, hearts may play fair, but a Flair walked away with the title. See, Brock Lesnar, I'm not doing the, I can't do this for any Brock Lesnar without having to guzzle the rest of my Gatorade, broke the Undertaker streak because he listened to advice like that. It's my Paul Heyman, I'm really working on it. Need to go back onto the network, watch both. The post and pre-show, the post and pre-shows for Raw and SmackDown need to be more like that.
Yeah, they do.
It's not that I hate Josh Matthews or anything, but they need to be more pointed like that.
Well, I just wish they would put Josh Matthews on commentary, because we don't need Cole for both shows.
Yeah, yeah. Or JBL.
Well, but I think JBL and Matthews worked well together.
I liked it, too. I did. Yeah. You get a point. Because there's more easy animosity out of that.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I will say this, though. Speaking of commentary, commentary team for TakeOver was William Regal, Tom Phillips, and Byron Saxton. Mm-hmm. I have no problem with that. Better commentary team than Arrival, which I think was Albert, Tom Phillips, and Alex Riley.
Yeah.
Which not...
Oh, I'll agree with that. Yep.
Not as good. They brought in the A-team. Tom Phillips, though, I would say is the most, most improved broadcaster in the last year. Guy's amazing.
Absolutely.
Makes watching Superstars and Main Event that much more fun.
Well, let's get to our first match of the evening. Our first match was the master of the... I'm blanking on the word. The Adam Rose Experience.
I was about to say,
I'm trying to remember the name of his goddamn
Exotic
bus.
Exotic Express.
Exotic Express, thank you. Well, of all the words for me to forget. But yes, Adam Rose versus, Camacho.
Yeah, not Sin Cara.
Yep, not Sin Cara, Camacho. In a basically rematch from a match they had last week on NXT, in which Camacho walked away. This is pretty much a match to, present Adam Rose.
Yeah, but I will admit, I didn't like this match this much, because keep in mind, remember what started Arrival?
Yeah.
That was Sami Zayn versus Cesaro, which was amazing. They started out strong. This time, not even close to strong. Was it a bad match? No. Rose looked good, and Camacho had a lot of offense.
Yeah. There was a great move he did to where it was, I believe it was like a sort of single arm type of suplex type of move, or double arm type of suplex maneuver that looked wonderful.
Are you talking about the finisher?
No. I'm talking about, he did this type of suplex where he literally, it looked like he lifted Rose, 10 feet
in the Camacho
air.
Suplex.
Yeah, Camacho.
No, Camacho is, the thing about that is he had more offense than I thought he would have in this match.
Oh, yeah.
It was a quick match either way. It was good, but, I mean, it didn't get me hyped for the rest of the... psyched up for the rest of what was coming. I don't want to use that word with this review. Yeah. It was a good match. I will admit, what's kind of sad? This Adam Rose match is better than the Adam Rose match that was on SmackDown the day after against Jack Swagger.
Yeah.
Who I know is awesome. I'm probably one of the few people who will stick up for Jack Swagger.
Too bad he had to smoke some of that weed before WrestleMania 29.
Oh, they were going to... I guarantee you they'd probably had him beat Del Rio.
Oh, yeah.
That would have been awesome.
It would have been a great feud with him being a heel, but nope. Apparently he had to run into Evan Bourne and RVD.
Yeah, no kidding.
By the way, Evan Bourne, please, why won't you bring him to TV?
I know. He's still under contract. Put him on NXT.
He's still under contract?
Give Tyson Kidd title matches and you're not putting Evan Bourne on at all? That's goofy. Yeah. I have nothing against Tyson Kidd, but I mean, like, put another good guy in, right?
Yeah. So our next match was for the NXT Tag Team Championship, featuring The Ascension versus the team of Kalisto and El Locale, aka Ricardo Rodriguez.
Yeah, I was about to say it's Kalisto, and I can't believe it's not Ricardo Rodriguez. And the best part is he's the mouthpiece of the team. Obviously, yes. We know who you are.
Well, you know, interesting news, and I'll say the news after. Well, I'll wait till at the end because I don't want to ruin anything for it. Well, obviously, people have seen it, have seen TakeOver, but I think it's better to be revealed after the main event, since there's actually some connection here, possibly. I was reading an article on the Bleacher Report.
I hate Bleacher Report.
For
me, this was the worst match of the night.
Really?
Yep. Here's why. It's just another Ascension squash match, just slightly more offense on the so-called jobber side.
You know what? I didn't think about that, but I have to agree with you.
How much offense did Kalisto really get off? They spend about 4 minutes just beating on Kalisto until El Locale gets in. And even when El Locale gets in, he's not putting out that much offense.
I mean, he was good, and even though he sort of botched on that springboard off the second rope, you know, he still recovered well. I think the thing that was really obvious, like, oh my God, I thought for sure this might be the place where the belts get dropped, but once they started beating on Kalisto, I knew, oh, they're not going to drop the belts.
Yeah, no, I had no expectations of this happening, not to Kalisto and El Locale. All this really does is just tell the people, the NXT crowd, we're making tag teams, okay? You don't have to have us, you know, we're not going to have a bajillion Ascension squash matches now. We're going to start forming some tag teams, you know?
Well, hopefully that's what they say, because, you know, it's just getting tiresome, you know, and I enjoy watching the Ascension.
Oh, I don't hate the Ascension. I think Conor O'Brien is excellent. He's been on NXT forever, though.
Yeah.
Either move them up or release them.
I think people are tired. They just want to see them move the Ascension. And obviously the Ascension are going to be moved up at some point. They're not going to release them. They've spent too much time and invested too much on that.
Oh, no. I'm just saying, like, you've had these guys forever. Just move them up already. You know, the main roster needs some more tag teams. Like, you know, it's basically right now the Wyatt family, the Usos, Rybacksel, sort of, kind of, Cody Rhodes and Goldust.
Kind of, sort of, yeah.
More tag teams after that, honestly. Soriyan B and Los Matadores, which are in a perpetual garbage feud.
Hair versus mask.
Oh, good Lord.
The WLC match at Extreme Rules.
No, I saw it. It was good.
Best matches of that night.
That should have capped off that feud, though.
All
this is doing is burying Heath Slater, Drew McIntyre, and Jinder Mahal.
WWE likes to hinder gender.
Which is sad. Just repackage Heath Slater as Big Clem Layfield and put McIntyre and Mahal in a tag team with some other gimmick. Just,
you know what the funny thing about it is? When 3MB first formed, I hated them. But now I like them, and I feel bad for them. My, how a year has changed things.
I know, but still, you know. Getting back to this, like, I kind of knew this was happening. Like, there was no there was, like, nothing here for me to sit back and go, oh, well, there's no danger of the Ascension losing the tag titles at all.
Well, you know, I guess this says that, you know, maybe they're waiting for, oh, God, I'm trying to remember his name now. Oh, he's Colin Cassidy's partner.
And Joe Amore.
And thank you. I know, like, why am I blanking on his name? I love him so much because that was another guy where when I first saw him about a year ago, he annoyed everybody. And then he grew on you. I'm like, oh my God, this guy is amazing.
Bada boom, realest guys in the room.
How you doing?
He is the most entertaining person they have down in NXT, and I guess he's still injured.
On the mic.
So I guess they're... Yeah. So... I guess they're waiting because they were a great tag team as well.
Yeah, well, like I said, it seems like they got to form some tag teams.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I think, like, Jason Jordan and Ty Dillinger are supposed to be a tag team.
Yeah.
Like, they hinted about that on Twitter, but I've yet to see them on TV. They may be doing house shows. But they mm-hmm. need some tag teams down there so that the Ascension don't have to squash jobbers constantly.
Exactly. And the other botch, by the way, there was actually two botches. There was that, and then there was a slight botch and the finisher. I don't know if you caught that.
Yeah, there was a slight botch with Fall of Man.
Yeah,
which
with
is
Fall
a
of Man.
Stupid finisher.
I
agree there should be like more awesome tag team finishers, you know, in the spirit of the Doomsday Device and the 3D, but I just do not like the Fall of Man. It feels like it looks like something you do on the schoolyard. It's goofy looking.
It's another version of the high low.
Yeah,
I think you know what? I think it would just be better if they just did the total elimination.
Yeah,
because that was a great version of the high low.
Yeah.
In this case, though, it's a spinning elbow and a rolling sweeping leg sweep.
Yeah. The problem is these guys are kind of too big to do that. It's kind of a little guy's move. Like, ironically enough, it's something luchadors should be doing as a finisher.
Yeah.
Because they can make it look fast and slick. You got a big guy like Conor O'Brien in there. It doesn't look as smooth.
Well, but to be honest,
about the right size, but.
But and I'm trying to remember the name of the tag team. But do you remember the tag team? It was around 2006. They were, I can't remember them, but they were this cowboy type tag team. One was a redneck, one was a cowboy.
I know who you're talking about. Couldn't tell you the names.
Yeah, I can't remember the names off the top of my head, but they did the high-low, and it was a clip and a clothesline. And that was pretty good as a high-low move.
Yeah, but I still think the high-low is something you give smaller guys.
I can see that thinking, but there's been a lot of big tag teams that have used that as a finisher.
I know, but it just feels like a great small guy move. It just does. Like if you put like Kalisto and New Sin Cara in a team, I think that would look a lot better on them.
Yeah, but they're more will probably want to do a high flying tag team maneuver.
Yeah. And while we're on the subject of bad tag team maneuvers, whatever it is that Los Matadores do is also bad. That's also garbage.
You mean the double Samoan drop?
Yeah, it's pretty much what it is.
Yep. Well, let's move on to what our next match the squash match, or was it Sane and Breeze? I can't remember.
The next technical match... It was Zayn versus Breezy.
Yeah. So Sami Zayn versus Tyler Breeze, both with new music.
I like their new entrance music because they want to push both of them.
I do kind of like Zayn's music. I don't know if I like it over his old music.
It grows on you, trust me.
I'm sure it'll grow on me. I still kind of like Breeze's old music, though.
I do, too. We knew new music for Breeze was coming because he basically said on Twitter he's recording it, his own new theme.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah. So,
I don't have Breeze on my...
Yeah. I you know, you gotta keep up on your Twitter. Your Twitter food. Yeah. But yeah, I would say easily this was the match of the night, by far.
Oh, yeah. Match of the... hands down, match of... Once again... Sami Zayn steals the show, even with a botch.
Oh, I know. He botched that orange crush.
No, it's called the Ricochet Bomb.
Oh, okay. Everyone's calling it an orange crush bomb.
Well, it's a version of the orange crush, but he calls it the Ricochet Bomb. No, Ricochet!
I get it. Just like the hell of a kick, I get it.
Yep.
Which, though on commentary they call it the Huluva kick because, you know, we have a brand up here called Hell of a Good Cheese. It's H-E-L-L-U-V-A. We still call it Hell of a.
It is a hell of a kick, though.
Yeah, it is a hell of a kick, and I like it. This was easily one of the best matches of the night. It had everything.
It was one of the best matches of the year. You're right. It had everything. It had flying. It had great mat tactician. Had a great story throughout of it. And, you know, honestly, you did not see Breeze winning. And I say that, I understand why you saw it coming, but for me, it was like, okay, they've had Zayn lose all these big matches. He can't possibly lose another big one. They can't possibly do that.
Yeah, but the thing about it is, even with as many losses as you think there are, Zayn is still ridiculously uber popular. They even mentioned in the pre and post shows that when they took him and Neville to Europe on the European tour, they knew who he was and they were olaying for him like crazy.
Oh, of course. He is world known. He's worldwide renowned.
But
ole, 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 ole.
But that's the thing. Breeze Zayn can afford the loss still, as odd as that sounds. Breeze would have lost a lot of momentum losing.
And here's the thing. I think that they are saving his win up for, if they go by their current schedule, the next NXT pay-per-view will probably happen right before SummerSlam.
Actually, it'll probably be a little after or around Night of Champions is the projection that was given.
It was? Okay.
Yeah, it'll be after SummerSlam.
I think that the next one is going to be Zayn versus... Oh, God. Why am I blanking on people? Why do I always blank? Botchamatis strikes again. Neville. I really think they're going to do that tag, and I think Zayn's going to be one to take the title off him.
That's even if Zayn is still on the NXT roster by then.
Yeah. Well, I know that... Well, the reason I say that is because I know they have plans to bring Neville up by SummerSlam. Or around SummerSlam. At least that's been the talk.
Yeah. The problem is you don't want to bring both up around the same time.
Yeah.
Because then NXT starts losing some real star power.
Yeah. Well, that's why I think they're going to bring Neville up first, and then they're going to bring Zayn in probably around the Royal Rumble. After they've given him a couple months with the title.
I think that's a good projection. That's something they're looking forward to.
Yeah.
Like I said, I didn't think Zayn had as much to lose by losing here. And it only psychs him up and psychs everyone up for when he gets a big, big, big win.
Yeah.
Breezy, what was awesome about this also was the finish. It was classic heel tactics, classic, you know, nobody looks weak coming out of this match type of finish. It was awesome.
It really spoke to his character of the, you know, opportunist. You know, something happened that caused an unintentional low blow, and it was an unintentional low blow. He was basically covering the face.
Yep, it all fits for Breeze's character, too. That's the best part, is it's not just traditional heel tactics. It's traditional heel tactics that work for Breeze.
Yes, sir.
Everything fits into his character. So he nails Zayn with a beauty shot, 1, 2, 3. Breezy's your new number one contender. I thought it was excellent. There couldn't have been, I don't think, the only story, there's a better story that was told in this event, but that was still pretty good.
Much as I hate to admit it, it comes down to the point that when you have people wanting to riot, you know you've done it right.
Yeah. Like I said, this was easily, you know, you couldn't have got better than this. This is the match that needed to happen with two guys who, you know, were going to have a good contest, even if it wasn't like a big long feud for it. It was, and the best part about it was, it's about the title for a change.
Yeah.
Not just, oh, he cost me the title, I'm going to give up hunting the title and go after this guy, which is what they kind of did with John Cena.
Yeah.
So it's no longer, you know, and I think that's kind of good. There's good motivation where you didn't need to have a elongated feud with it. So this was easily probably my favorite match of the night.
Well, technically our next thing that happened
is a segment.
It was Rusev coming back to NXT and being interrupted by Mojo Rawley. So
basically Lana comes out, cuts a promo, introduces Rusev. They both come out. Russia is awesome. Americans suck. Blah, 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 blah. Out comes Mojo Rawley, because nothing says America like Mojo Rawley, who comes out, interrupts Rusev, and gets absolutely clowned for his trouble.
Mm-hmm.
He gets the ever-loving crap beaten out of him. And that's it. That's it. Rusev beats the crap out of Mojo Rawley. Mojo looks like a joke. Rusev's on the main roster and is barely at NXT and is currently feuding with no one. This will go nowhere into a feud. And just sets up the reminder that Rusev is one of the guys who left NXT. Segment sucks.
And that Mojo is probably now going to be a jobber.
Well, here's the thing. Everyone in the internet wrestling community loved this segment for the fact that Mojo got the ever-loving man shit beaten out of him.
I will say this. I did like it for that when I go back and rewatch it, I'll like it for that reason. I'll be quite honest. When I heard Mojo's music, I, said, I can skip and take a piss break for this segment.
Here's the thing. I have a way I would have wrote this segment to make it look awesome and still watch Mojo get the ever-loving crap beaten out of him. You have the segment play out. Mojo comes out. He gets clowned. He's in the accolade. Lana won't give Rusev the order to release it. And then suddenly, 3-8 enough, man, 95, and out comes Biggie Langston, who's Uber over at NXT.
Uber at NXT, and they are building a feud with him.
Yeah, they're gonna have a match at Payback.
Yes, sir.
You could have pushed Payback in that segment. You could have pushed Biggie Langston. You could have made Mojo Rawley look save some kind of face because Biggie's coming out to make the save for Mojo. Though it's not really to save Mojo, it's to beat the crap out of Rusev before their match at Payback in USA, USA. You know, that would have made the segment really good, and you still would have got Mojo getting the crap beaten out of him.
Yes, sir.
And you would have pushed Payback on the WWE Network. You know, it's not like people aren't going to watch it, but they put the live events on YouTube. They put the live events on Hulu without Hulu Plus. So you can actually get these off the network the day after. So this would have been a great way to push the network and the pay-per-view and maybe squeeze a few more subscribers in before the pay-per-view. Wasted opportunity. That's why I hate the segment so bad. As for Mojo Rawley, I don't get people's hate for this guy. And I'm going to play so devil's advocate on Mojo Rawley.
Oh, God.
I'm going to mention another name. And a lot of people like this guy. His name is Daniel Bryan.
No, you didn't. Oh, sir.
Here's where I can compare Mojo Rawley and Daniel Bryan. Now, listen closely, because I know a lot of people are screaming right now. Daniel Bryan...
I would like to add that I don't know this person.
Daniel Bryan came into WWE, greatest wrestler on the planet, best in the world, but he's dry. He's dry. He doesn't have, great promo skills. He doesn't, as The Miz actually said on screen, he doesn't have a personality, and that was true. If you look through his United States Championship run, he didn't exactly have all the mic skills. He didn't have the presentation skills that were good for the total package WWE wrestler. Guess what? You gave him a few years. You gave him some really great momentum with the World Heavyweight Championship, with Team Hell No, and with the whole Yes thing. And guess what? He's the most beloved guy on the planet right now. Even people who didn't get him, who didn't understand this guy was in the industry for 10 years, seen any of his Ring of Honor or indie matches or anything from Chikara or anything like that. You know, most WWE viewers probably have no idea what Ring of Honor is. So they've probably never seen him before that. So now everybody loves the guy. Now, Mojo Rawley is the exact opposite of Daniel Bryan. He's a guy who has all of the tools necessary to incite a crowd and get them behind him, but absolutely no wrestling skill. I can't hate Mojo Rawley for the same reason I couldn't hate Daniel Bryan. He needs better wrestling skill. It's going to take time, but when Mojo Rawley eventually gets the wrestling skill to back up the natural charisma he can incite the crowd with, the guy's going to be huge. It's all up to, you know, this is a guy that they can bank the whole performance center on. They need to get him some great, great wrestling skill. Get that asinine hyperdrive finisher off of him, which is an ass bump, which should only be reserved for guys who are over 400 pounds and dancing with glasses. Nice Rikishi joke, right?
Yeah. No, look, all I'm saying is I'm not going to be surprised the day they call him Earthquake.
But no, think about it. That's why I can't totally hate Mojo Rawley. Now, I wouldn't have minded the segment if he got totally clowned and trounced with Rusev, so long as Big E was involved. Keep that in mind. This would the, I don't hate the segment because Mojo sucks. I hate the segment because they had a missed opportunity.
I no, I see where you're going, though. I think you're standing on that Mojo Rawley island all by yourself.
No, I'm standing on there. I know I'm standing alone, but, you know, that's what I do. That I do that with a lot of stuff. You know, if you want that and you like anime, go listen to Shaft Plus. I do that all the time. You know, I'm the guy who's, I have, you know, the week before, I'm the guy who's like, oh, I didn't really like Gurren Lagann. I didn't really like that show.
Well, wait, you didn't like Gurren Lagann?
Nope.
Thank the Lord!
Oh, good. I'm glad I'm not the only one. I found it very average. I could talk to you about that off the show, though. But no,
yeah.
That's the thing. And I wish people would get behind that. You know, you can't hate a guy for the same reason you like another guy.
Okay. Look, I agree with you that if he develops great wrestling skill, you know, he'll be great. The point is he has to develop wrestling skill. But all they're seemingly doing with him right now is that it's all about, you know, I don't stay hype. I don't get hype.
His gimmick's kind of stupid, too.
It's stupid. It's like, oh, here comes another squash match. You know.
But think about it. Daniel Bryan had really goofy. Think about it. Daniel Bryan, when they did the original NXT, never won a match.
But I'll say this. Daniel Bryan was actually entertaining.
Yeah, but that's...
Mojo Rawley isn't. That's the point.
Well, for some odd reason, the crowd at NXT still gets behind him, and that's a smart crowd.
That's why they're called smart marks.
Yeah, but they actually kind of get it. Now, the only...
You know, it's kind of like when you go to Britain, the heels all get cheered and all the faces get booed.
Oh, no, I get it. Well, not all the faces.
Well, besides Daniel Bryan and CM Punk. But the rest of the faces pretty much get booed.
Well... Let's see. I'm trying to think of some faces who don't get booed. I don't think they'd boo Biggie Langston.
Oh, they booed Biggie Langston.
Oh, I don't remember that. I'm going to have to go back and watch the London Raw and SmackDown. Because I don't think they booed every face on there. I know they cheered a lot of heels. Like, they cheered Cesaro. They cheered Bad News Barrett. I don't think they booed Rob Van Dam. Rob Van Dam was there. Pretty sure they didn't boo him. They'll boo Sheamus. They'll boo John Cena. I know that.
They hate the Evian living guts out of John Cena.
That's the problem.
We need to call London Chicago Light.
Oh, I can't wait for Payback.
Oh, God, Payback, Chicago.
I know. That's the thing I'm afraid of, because they can't pull that Paul Heyman thing twice. They can't do that twice. So, yeah, When Mojo gets squashed, he stays squashed.
And speaking of squashes that weren't squashes, let's move on to our next match, which is for the NXT Women's Championship. We have Charlotte with the legendary Ric Flair in her corner versus Natalya with the legendary Bret Hart in her corner.
No. Natalya came out with a corpse that resembled Bret Hart. Charlotte came out with a genuine article. So before the match, they have Paige come out to a big pop, say a few words, and then take off. Mm-hmm. Which is fine. Everybody likes Paige. I think Paige is awesome. Paige is the best thing since AJ Lee, in my opinion.
It's going to be so great when AJ Lee comes back from her wedding and they can have a feud.
Oh, that's going to be lovely.
Oh, yeah.
Because you could tell everything's, like, on the back burner. Because, like, Divas... Here's the thing. Like, this match, if you hated the last few Divas matches on Raw and SmackDown, especially when you have Eva, I Can't Count to Three, Marie refereeing, and Summer Rae refereeing, and you got this weird Nikki Bella feud over a painting. Oh, this match is gonna clean the taste out of your mouth. It's gonna, gonna brush your mouth like Colgate. That's the only time I'm quoting Cena's theme song tonight.
Wow.
This match was awesome.
Yes, it was.
For a Divas match, it's easily going to be match of the year. For a women's match, I don't think anything will top this.
I'll say this. I thought it was going to be hard to top Paige and Emma for what they did at Arrival.
Sure.
Because what they did at Arrival was women's match of the year at the current time. Because we were like, oh, yes, that's the type of women's match we want on Raw and SmackDown.
Or pay-per-view.
And then this match came, or pay-per-view for that matter. Then this match came along. I'm like, this is the type of match we want to see on pay-per-view.
Well, here's the thing about this. It was the kind of it was a gamble match for anyone who's been watching NXT. If you've been following NXT, Charlotte isn't exactly the best diva on that roster in the last year.
Yeah.
So much so they took her off TV for 2 months, 2 or 3 months. And then they had her join the BFFs when she came back. They didn't have her on Arrival. They had her in the audience for Arrival sitting with Ric Flair.
Mm-hmm.
That's when she was off TV. Since she came back, totally different competitor. So you had a gamble here because Natalia's good. They just don't let her be good on Raw, SmackDown, and pay-per-view.
Oh, yeah.
Like, every Natty match at NXT is fun to watch.
And it was great to see her with a bit of an attitude, because there's that point to where, you know, she starts wooing at Flair. I'm like, holy shit, where's this attitude from Natalya?
I love the attitude. That being said, I don't ever want her to turn heel, but I want her to have that heart attitude. You know why? It felt like Bret and Owen and Davey Boy from the 90s, man.
Oh, yeah.
It felt like a breath of fresh air. That's some spiritual succession.
Oh, yeah.
Charlotte
and
was doing
some
of that stuff, too.
It was a great to where, you know, Charlotte changes words, and then it hypes Flair up in front of him and goes, woo! Woo!
Yeah! That's crazy. It's like, outside. Like, this match was also banking on the fact that you have two Hall of Famers out there. Like, the problem is, they've had Bret Hart ringside at NXT before, and he's barely animated.
Yeah.
Then you're putting Ric Flair out there, too. I'm like, wait, one's going to outdo the other, because unfortunately, poor Bret Hart is taking a nap, and Ric Flair is out there styling, profiling, and being Ric Flair.
Flair thinks he's back at Starrcade 1984.
I know. It was great. I mark out for Ric Flair. I'm not afraid to say it. I will still mark out for Ric Flair.
But the thing I love was the submissions in this match, because you knew Natalya was going to have the sharpshooter. I didn't know Charlotte was going to bring the figure four.
Better than the Miz. Better than Miz. Better than Miz.
Well, you know, they're talking about having, you know, when Miz comes back, he's going to have Flair as his manager.
Which would actually be kind of cool momentum. Here's the thing. I believe there was a better than Batista chant during this match, too. I believe.
Why? We don't know.
Because a lot of things are better than Batista, apparently. Now, the best part about this match, it was old school to start with. The first 5 minutes of this match was nothing but mat holds.
Oh, yes.
Nothing but reversed holds, and I liked that. And then it intensified.
I loved it.
And then, because I sat back and I'm like, I know this is not going to end in a submission, but I want to see sharpshooters. I want to see figure fours. I want to see a Charlotte's Web in there. I want to see some good wrestling. And that's exactly what we got. This felt like an old school match, though. You know, we're going to be talking about Wrestle War 92 later. This felt like a really good old school WCW, even some good WWF stuff. This felt great.
This felt like what they were doing in 2001, 2002, 2003, even 2004, at the height of, you know, Kurt Angle and Chris Benoit and the other great Matt Titians that they had in the WWE.
Sure. And not even just Angle and Benoit. There was a lot of guys who did a lot of great Matt work. And most of those
guys, had Dean Malenko still at that point in time there.
Eddie Guerrero came back.
Guerrero.
You had great mat skill wrestling. You could even have some old mainstay. Like I said, there's a match around that era where the Big Show and Kane have nothing but holds. It shocks the crap out of Jim Ross. But this...
I'll be darned! They're actually doing a wrestling hold!
Here's the thing, though. It really... It feels like they brought out Bret Hart and Flair to, you know, psychologically make us think this is going to be the next generation match of an old feud. It's Natty and Charlotte who actually sold it. Natty's attitude just felt like every classic Hart Foundation match. Felt like the Harts when they were heel, face, when Bret had the title, when Owen had titles and went heel, when they had Jim Neidhart out there, when they had Davey Boy out there, and they had Pillman. It felt like that kind of, all that culminated for Natty. And then you had the style and profile and Ric Flair. It felt like, you know, the power of the Horsemen were almost behind Charlotte. It's like they were possessed in this match by great 90s wrestling, the kind of wrestling I grew up with. Yeah. I could not believe how good this was.
Bar none, it was. And the thing, here's the thing. You knew that Charlotte was going to win. You knew they weren't going to put the title on. And that was the thing that going into the match worried me, is that you knew Charlotte was going to win. Yeah. They're not going to put the title on Natalya. At the same point in time, they still put on one hell of a match with a great story themed around, you know, the next generation. You're right. They sold it. And it really was, you know, great submission wrestling. This is what women's wrestling is supposed to be.
Well, here's the thing. Paige versus Emma at Arrival was, this is the future of women's wrestling. This is what you're going to see in a year or two at WrestleMania for a Divas title. This match was a beautifully written love letter to the past to remind us why people watch wrestling. Good wrestling.
I mean, this wasn't just good for a women's match. This was good for any match. This outperformed some of the men.
Oh, well, I love this match a lot better than Adam Rose versus Camacho and the tag
absolutely.
Match.
Absolutely.
And this rivaled the other two main events, Zayn versus Breezy and Tyson Kidd versus Adrian Neville.
Yeah.
Easily, this match was awesome. Could not have gone any better.
Speaking of Kidd versus Neville, let's move on to our main event for the NXT title. You had Adrian Neville versus Tyson Kidd, and my God, I love this match.
I love this match, and too.
It started out slow, but it built, and just there was a lot of great storytelling of, you know, these two wrestlers who are like-minded, but they pulled out some stops.
I love the fact they were mirroring each other's moves at times during the match. That was awesome. The other thing I loved, Tyson Kidd is a damn good heel. He knows how to heal it up. I was shocked because this guy's been babyface for a long time.
Oh, he, you know, the whole small time he was in, he showed glimpses of being a good heel. They just never fully went through it and never pushed him anywhere when he was a heel.
But it was good. And to mention the post show again, they actually have Tyson Kidd come out and Renee's trying to do that nice good guy commentator thing and ask, oh, that was a rough match. How do you feel? That Paul Heyman interrupts her and says, what Miss Young is trying to say very, very nicely is you lost. What is going through your mind now that you've lost? And then he just slams down the mic and walks off. Tyson Kidd doesn't say a word. I know I just spoiled the match before we talked about the match. I don't care. But it's just their
situation. I think everybody knows what happened in this match.
I know it. Well, the thing about it is it accentuates just basic stuff you can do as a heel, and it just works.
I know. But, you know, you had that, and then you had, like, the great maneuvers, that, you know, the great spots, the spot where Tyson Kidd goes for the powerbomb, and he flips Neville off, and Neville just does a flip and land on his... It's like, how did he do that?
I loved that spot. That was amazing. This felt like a very, very good indie match. because it wasn't slow at any point. It was 100% fast paced. I also love the modified Russian leg sweep off the second rope. That was cool too.
Oh, that was beautiful. Then you had the Houston Hangover when Neville was stuck on the second rope.
Yeah, and then Neville did it to Kidd.
No. You're thinking about when he put him in the Hangman Newt. Oh, right.
Sorry.
The Houston Hangover is the flip leg drop.
Yep, you're right.
You're thinking of the Tree of Woe, where Kidd puts Neville in the Tree of Woe, and he kicks him in the back three times, and then does the hesitant drop kick, a.k.a. the drop kick of Kurt Sabin.
Yeah, I was about to say, that was my one problem is with Tyson Kidd, is he botches that drop kick. Neville does it perfectly.
I didn't really see that much of a botch with it. I mean, they looked like they both did it pretty much the same. Maybe Neville a bit better, but it's basically both.
No, Neville's was clean. Kidd dropped a little bit, so only one of his legs actually made impact with Neville or appeared to make impact with Neville.
Yeah, but either way,
it's not a horrible botch.
No, either way, it's the Chris Sabin, you know, hesitation dropkick.
Yeah.
But my favorite spot in the match is. And the only thing I have a problem with it is I wish they would have done it in the middle of the ring, because I think it would have made Neville look stronger. But the point where Kidd goes for the sharpshooter, and then Neville counters it, and then Kidd counters that into the dungeon lock. Do you know how long it's been since we've seen the dungeon lock?
It's been forever. I marked out on that one. And I want to give props to commentary for pointing it out. So I don't even think it was William Regal who pointed it out. I think it was Tom Phillips.
Yes.
Who said it was the dungeon, who pointed out the dungeon lock. That impressed me, because for as many times as you hear Regal call out a move, you're starting to hear the other guys call out moves. It's very refreshing to hear someone who's not William Regal call a move in a match.
Absolutely. It was just wonderful to see the dungeon lock.
Like, oh, my gosh. Yeah, it's been forever. Well, like, who's left to, like, really do it and do it justice besides Tyson Kidd?
Yeah, until Bret Hart or someone in the Hart family teaches it to somebody else.
There's another Hart. I believe there's another Hart dungeon graduate in NXT. I just can't remember who it is.
But I didn't know there was another. I thought Tyson Kidd was the last
one. He was the last one, but there's another guy who like went indie for a while after training there.
Oh, okay. Then it has to be an indie guy.
Yeah, that they signed from NXT. I can't remember who it is.
Now I want to try to figure it out.
It's not worth it, because I read it and I can't remember where it was.
But this was
definitely a great match, because it gave us a little bit of difference and a little bit of the same from both.
And I love the finish, the Hurricane Rana off the top rope, the Frankensteiner, because the Hurricane Rana, you go all the way through, it's a pinning move. Because I know somewhere TWK is wants to correct me on that.
So I've always thought that a Frankensteiner was always a stiff flip, whereas a Hurricane Rana is a throwing flip, kind of like the difference, like it's a subtle difference, kind of like how an Enziguri is slightly different than a Shining Wizard.
Yeah, well, you know, according to T-Dub, you know, again, he is the man who knows 100 moves.
Well, that makes him 1/10 the man of Chris Jericho.
Exactly. I'm going to pay for that later somehow, I know.
Chris Jericho, man of 1,001 holds. You've never seen him do that in WCW, and I don't even like WCW.
Oh, no, hold one, arm bar.
Okay.
Hold two, hold three. The moss covered, three-handed family credenzel.
I like how they had him repeat the gimmick in WWE, but it was people he beat. The 1,001 people he beat. It was actually kind of fun.
Yeah, it was. But no, the Hurricane Rana is, you know, tuck in and the pin. Frankensteiner is the release. And I remember this because when John Cena first did the Franken Cena on CM Punk a year ago, yeah, or over a year ago, year and a half ago, He was like, I was like, oh, it was awesome to see Cena do a Hurricane Run. They're like, nope, it's a Frankensteiner.
Yeah, even I said that. I'm like, no, that's a Frankensteiner. Too stiff to be a Hurricane Runner.
Yep. That's why it's called the Franken-Cena, which sounds so much better.
Back to this match, though.
Yeah, but the
100% no John Cena.
But the Frankensteiner off the top rope to set up the Red Arrow was awesome.
That was good. That was really good. And that's the thing. Whenever people are saying the guys we're going to see in 3 or 4 years with belts are going to be Neville and Zayn, they're not kidding.
Yep.
If you're paying attention to any of the athleticism they're doing, you're going to be seeing feuds between like Rollins and Neville and Reigns and Bo Dallas and Ambrose and Sami Zayn. Like,
oh God,
you're going to be seeing stuff like that. And by the way, I think Bo Dallas has actually gotten better. Not just his gimmick, his wrestling. Actually, he's gotten older.
Well,
I hate his finisher, though.
Last Friday night on Ref Down, the chat room was full, and there was a battle between the Rosebuds and the Bo Leavers.
I love it.
And it was like, this person is a Rosebud, this person is a Bo Leaver. Well, I believe that I'm a Rosebud. Oh, my God. Do you know I actually go into work and say, you know, don't be a lemon, be a Rosebud.
Oh, God. You haven't been fired yet?
No. I'm too good to be fired.
So that's
takeover. I'm the best in the world.
So that's takeover.
That's what I do.
I almost feel like this is a whole episode in itself.
Yes. Well, we just reached the hour mark, so I'm going to take a quick break, and we are going to play a couple promos. And when we come back, we're going to get into Wrestle War 1992. After these messages, we'll be
right back. Hey, everyone. My name is Michael Bailey.
And I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And we host a podcast called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast.
Presented by the Superman homepage. On the show... Wait.
What?
This just isn't working out for me. It's not bombastic enough. We need something epic.
Like what?
Welcome to From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast, presented by the Superman homepage. I am Jeffrey Taylor.
And I am Michael Bailey.
From Crisis to Crisis chronicles the adventures of Superman.
Wait. I'm just not feeling this.
I'm just wondering how there's a needle scratching sound when all of this is clearly digital.
Look, all we need to say is that this is a trailer for a show called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast presented by the Superman homepage. My name is Michael Bailey.
I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And every week we give in-depth synopsis and reviews for just about every Superman book published between Man of Steel number 1 in 1986
and Adventures of Superman number 649 in 2006. We also talk about the related Superman media, what was happening in the rest of the world when these comics were published, and what else was going on in the DC Universe.
The show drops every Thursday-ish at the Superman homepage, which is located at www.supermanhomepage.com.
From Crisis to Crisis is also a proud member of the Superman Podcast Network, located at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
So join Jeffrey and I each week as we explore Superman during the post-crisis era, which includes Exile, Panic in the Sky, Doomsday, The Marriage, and beyond.
And write into the show at FromCrisisToCrisis@gmail.com and hear it read on the air, eventually, because we get behind on that sort of thing.
Superman created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. Side effects from Crisis to Crisis include loss of money from buying back issues, a desire to read 20-year-old comic books, nausea, drowsiness, pizza, blurred vision, upset stomach, a desire to kick puppies and kittens, and backache from lifting boxes of Superman comics. If the excitement of From Crisis to Crisis lasts more than 4 hours, seek immediate medical attention.
Hey, Michael.
Hey, Dad.
We need to record another new trailer.
Another one?
Yes. You know that we read comics and then talk about comics, because as we've established, talking about comics you've not read is just dumb.
Yeah, and you make me do it every Thursday.
Well, we've moved.
Have we?
Yes, we have outgrown our old location.
station. I don't feel like I've moved.
And we have now moved to twotruefreaks.com.
What was that again?
Twotruefreaks.com. Hey Kids Comics, still every Thursday at twotruefreaks.com.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman, or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at twotruefreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
Play it. Come on. Play it loud. Play it loud.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Illogic. Foolish emotions. A constant irritant.
Intentile out! Freak!
Two!
Come on, the circus. Right next to the dog-faced boy.
True!
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Oh, shit.
It's a super prize package worth $9,388.
This isn't the biggest bag over the head punch in the face I ever got. God damn it!
Ow! Go away, Peyton!
And now, together by live simulation via the internet, your hosts, Scott Gardner.
He killed a police officer, for Christ's sake!
Yeah, goddamn lucky he didn't kill her.
And Chris Honeywell.
Keep away! Keep away from me!
You are physically repulsive, intellectually retarded, vulgar, insensitive, selfish, stupid. You have no taste, a lousy sense of humor, and you smell.
So you're looking at me?
Yeah, because she thought you're some kind of freak. Now come on,
hey,
let's God, go.
She likes me, eh?
No way.
Shut up, you freak!
Surely it's you.
I say shut up! It's a man!
TwoTrueFreaks.com.
And welcome back, and let's get right into our main topic for tonight. No, it wasn't just NXT TakeOver that I brought Mean Gene over for. I brought him over to talk about an event that happened on May 17th, 1992, with an attendance of 6,000 at the Jacksonville Memorial Coliseum in Jacksonville, Florida, presented by WCW. We have Wrestle War 92 War Games with the theme of Destroy or Be Destroyed.
Were you alive in 1992?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Dude, I was born in 1985.
Oh, I thought you were much younger.
I'm 28.
I thought you were much younger. That's a compliment.
I'm at that age to where I now take that as an insult. We must feud, sir.
I was 9. I was actually a big WWE guy, kid at the time. Like, we would, at this time, we would actually, my mom would order WrestleMania every year. So we probably, this is like a month after I probably watched the WrestleMania for that year.
And I think I was about 8. Let's see, 96, 86, 87, 88, 89, 90, 91, 7, so.
Actually, I probably would have been 8, because it would have been before my birthday, which is in June.
Yeah.
So I'd have been 8.
But going down our
list, I was about to say, I took like notes for this. like you said, attendance was 6,000. That looked like a big, huge crowd. Amazing for 92. Like, it looked bigger than like most WWE crowds for some odd reason. Like, it looked packed in there.
Yeah, it was packed, but it's
only 6,000.
At least the notes that Wikipedia has given me, because of course, you know, we can always trust Wikipedia.
Yeah, I saw that. Only 6,000. It just looked like there was way more.
Yeah, you know, you're right. It does look like it's way more, but, you know, I think that, but it didn't have a second level, I think.
Yeah, and that might be why.
Yeah. Because
there was no second level.
There's no second.
But
it's
just
not like
looked, it just looked packed in there, though. It looked like it was more than 6K.
Yeah, it's, you know, it was only a one-level arena, and that's probably why. But, you know, actually the first match, our dark match, which is not on WWE Network, features Diamond Dallas Page and Tom Rich versus Bob Cook and Firebreaker Chip.
I would totally talk about this match if they showed it.
And I don't know three of these guys. The only guy we all know is Diamond Dallas Page.
Yeah, well, there's a Legends of Wrestling where DDP kind of goes into his early days, so.
Yeah. DDP apparently wins by pinning Cook.
Okay.
But the first match we actually see is the fabulous Freebirds from Bad Street USA of Jimmy Garvin and Michael P.S. Hayes versus the TaylorMade Man / Terry Taylor / the Red Rooster.
At least he has a nice looking haircut this time around. Doesn't look like a stooge.
And Greg the Hammer Valentine for the WCW United States Tag Team Championship. You know, this is a pretty good opening match.
No, it's not bad at all. I was about to say, like, I took notes. These are really goofy notes, too. Like, one of them is, wow, Michael Hayes was thin once.
The man's still waiting to be inducted. That should, by the way, be a theme for this year. Induct Michael Hayes into the Hall of Fame.
It's been a theme, like, with the internet wrestling crowd for like, the last three. I don't have a problem. They'll do it eventually.
Yep.
If I had any complaints, it's a good match. I would say the build-up was really slow.
Yeah, it was
even
really
for an
slow.
Old-school match.
Mm-hmm.
I also... I like this note, too, because there was a lot of knife-edge chops, which were more common than back in the day. I love the fact that the crowd didn't do the Ric Flair woo on everyone. That was refreshing.
Well... That happened a little bit later.
No, I know when it happened. It happened during Evolution's, like, time in wrestling, which wasn't for another 10 years. Like, the whole crowd doing the woo for every knife-edge chop, whether it was Ric Flair or not.
I think it really started to come into the crowd when Ric Flair first joined the WWE.
Yeah, which was more... Well, joined WWE, like, the second time. When he was when he was co-owner with Vince and Evolution and all that. That's what I mean. Like, it wouldn't happen for another 10 or so years. I just thought it was kind of refreshing to...
One of my notes is that I find it interesting that, you know, they're using their second opening theme, which I only know of that because of Legends of Wrestling. Because when they're talking about bad gimmicks... The episode we're talking about, Bad Gimmicks, they, you know, they bring up the night they debuted that song and the technical difficulties.
Yeah.
But, DDT for the win. I find it interesting that they both, their finisher is both, for both of them, is the DDT.
Which is fine. You know, back in 92, the DDT was, like, a really power, you know, was the power move.
Oh yeah,
you know, it was a finisher for Jake the Snake Roberts in WWF, and the Freebirds used it in WCW, and I thought that was nice. It's a very devastating, and they made old school DDTs look like devastating moves.
Oh yeah,
like you have to do some kind of awesome twist to a DDT to make them look good. Like you know, tornado DDT or the kind of elevated DDT that guys like Dean Ambrose and Dolph Ziggler are using.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Or, you know, the Impaler DDT that Edge would used to do.
I think the closest thing to that, well, you also have someone paying homage to Mick Foley with the double arm DVD.
That would be Bo Dallas.
I was about to say, if you let me believe in my joke, I would have gotten to that part. But no, this was good, and I got through the entire match without making a Red Rooster joke, so I can say I'm a little better than JBL.
Well, our next match features Johnny, the most beautiful wrestler in the world, Johnny Be Bad, versus future ECW FBI member Tracy Smothers.
Young Pistol Tracy. Man, these gimmicks didn't age well.
Oh, no, they didn't.
Especially when you remember that Johnny Be Bad is Mark Marrow.
Yep.
Those are gimmicks that would not have flown less than 10 years later.
Do you notice who else was in this match?
Oh, no.
The referee.
Oh, I was, like, looking to the refs to see if I'd recognize any of them.
It was Bill Alfonso. Maybe he didn't recognize him because he didn't have a whistle in his mouth next to RVD and Sabu.
Now, the ring announcer sounded very familiar. Is that the same guy who was doing the ring announcing for One Night Stand? Because it sounded like it.
I don't know. I would have to go back.
That's the connection I was making. Aside from the fact that some of these guys eventually make into ECW.
And WWE, yeah. But no, that was Bill Alfonso refereeing. He refereed a couple of matches this night.
Okay.
He Paul Heyman would bring him with him when he would start ECW. So yeah. It was like, oh, wow, it's a young Bill Alfonso.
Yeah, I didn't notice that. And
he's actually not annoying.
And you also got to mention that commentary was Jesse the Body Ventura and Jim Ross.
Thank God it wasn't Tony Schiavone and
Eric Bischoff. Because they put the camera on Schiavone and Bischoff. I'm like, oh, thank God there's a mute button. And then they pass it off, and I see Jim Ross and Jesse the Body Ventura. Like, oh, my God, get that mute button off. Holy crap.
Did you mute it every time they went back to Schiavone and Bischoff?
No, because Schiavone and Bischoff only talk for 2 minutes. I could last that long. But no, I like this match.
It was a fun match.
Aside from those gimmicks sucking balls, that was an awesome match. It was also, and I mentioned commentary because commentary really helped sell the match. Like, you had the body going all over Johnny B. Badd's boxing background and how he does a lot of closed fists and his punches. I thought that was really kind of good because it kind of like it was a good heel persona that we don't see very often.
Oh, absolutely. And that finish was pretty fun to where it was that sneaky little right hook.
Yeah, it was great. I never thought I'd enjoy a Mark Marrow match.
Well, what happened was he got teamed with Sable and everybody liked Sable.
Yeah. Well, I think what really killed him was Brawl for All, but... Which is sad because the guy was an amateur boxer.
You know what the amazing thing in all of that is? The guy who comes out the best of Brawl for All is JBL.
Yeah, it's Bradshaw. Bradshaw's the only guy whose career didn't get ruined by Brawl for All.
I was watching the worst, you know, the biggest blunders in WWE Countdown, and they come to Brawl for All, and I love that, you know, JBL's on there. He's like, nobody told me that Bart Gunn had that right hook. He hit me, and I was out.
And then he faces Butterbean, and his one punch, that's it. Last job, Bart Gunn. He was definitely the Jannetty in that team.
Uh-huh.
Oh, great cruiserweight match. I think that's kind of like the trend for this pay-per-view for the most part for me.
And there were a lot of light heavyweights. They weren't cruiserweights yet. They were light heavyweights, they called
them. I don't care. I interchange it.
Well, our next match featured Scotty Flamingo versus Marcus Bagwell. Uh-huh. Not quite the male gigolo that he is now.
Not quite. The stuff wasn't there for Buff.
Nope. This was early in his career.
I was about to say, it's early career Buff Bagwell versus Raven. And Scotty Flamingo looked exactly like Raven does normally, just with a stupider coat.
Oh, my God.
You didn't notice?
No.
My God, man. That's the first thing I looked at, like, is that friggin' Raven?
What about I never got a what good look Raven? At him, to be
and
quite
I
honest.
The Wikipedia, and I'm like, it is friggin' Raven. We have Raven versus Buff Bagwell in 1992. It's not that bad of a match, but it's not because of Bagwell. It's because Raven doesn't suck.
Yeah. Okay, it was ECW that he became Raven. Yes. Okay.
He became Raven in ECW. They took it to WWE. They took it to ROH. So the guy got to keep the gimmick, like, after he got an ECW. That was, like, the money gimmick for him. Because he did it in ECW, he did it in WWE, and he did it in Ring of Honor.
I now look horrible on this podcast.
Yeah.
But no,
Botchamata strikes again.
Botchamata. Well, you know, the thing is, I'll be honest, there were three matches that I really didn't pay attention to. This was one of them. I mean, I watched it, but I didn't pay attention to the entrance. I caught the end of it.
Yeah, because I was about to say, it took me a second to realize Johnny B. Badd would eventually be Mark Mero because of the long hair. But Scotty Flamenco, the guy has had the same haircut for 20 years. I'm like, oh, it's Raven. Nice. Obviously, I knew Marcus Bagwell was Buff Bagwell.
But that's because he's pretty much the same build. I'm not used to seeing Raven without a shirt and cut jeans.
And a leather jacket.
Yeah, I'm not used to seeing him not like that.
That was a decent match, though. Like I said, because of Scotty Flamenco, not Bagwell. Even in 92, Bagwell sucked. It's clear nobody liked the guy, so. Decent match. Another light heavyweight awesomeness. And it just reminds me that, like, that was the best asset of WCW that I missed.
Our next match is, it was supposed to be a tag team match. It was scheduled to be Ron Simmons and Junkyard Dog versus Mr. Hughes, who I only realize now actually was a wrestler and not just some valet that got passed around organizations.
Pretty much was a valet 9 times out of 10, though.
Yeah, but Mr. Hughes and Cactus Jack.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. When I saw this on Wikipedia, I didn't realize, like, because I'm, like, reading through it, like, as I'm going, I'm like, oh, wow, Foley, all right, things are looking up. But the match ends up being one-on-one. Cactus Jack attacks Junkyard Dog during the entrance.
Yep.
Lays him out in the concrete. They drag JYD.
back to the back. And it turns out to be Ron Simmons versus Mr. Hughes.
With Foley ringside.
Yeah.
I forgot how awesome 90s Mick Foley characters were.
Well, he was a bad guy here.
Oh, no, just in general. I don't care. Good guy, bad guy. I forgot how awesome he was in the 90s. Yeah. All throughout, whether he's Cactus Jack, Mankind, Dude Love, just Mick Foley. I forgot how totally freaking awesome he was throughout the 90s.
Yep.
Especially from, like, early 90s till about mid-90s, where he was just batshit crazy no matter what the gimmick was. Even his Dude Love. Like, Dude Love wasn't just, like, the hipster. He was, like, deranged, too. Uncle Vinny's got some stuff to lay on you, Jack. It's like he was doing, like, a half hipster, hippie hipster doofus and half Dusty Rhodes when he was Dude Love. But I forgot how absolutely insanely cool Foley was as Cactus Jack in WCW. And, like, they spent a fair amount of time pointing him out. I just wanted to mention that. Oh, also, did you catch the Bill Watts joke that Ventura says on the air? I thought that was great.
No, I think I did, yeah. but I forgot it.
Yeah, I thought that was clever of Ventura, because, like, nobody liked Bill Watts. They, like, if you listen to, like, most of the old promotion talk they do on Legends of Wrestling on the WWE Network, yeah, they don't like him that much.
Yeah.
I think.
But no, it's interesting to see Ron Simmons.
Oh, Ron Simmons was awesome in his prime.
Yeah.
Like, before he becomes Farouk. Guy was awesome. Well, he, actually, before he became Nation of Domination Farouk. Yeah. So I thought he looked kind of cool when he was like the Roman, the black Roman gladiator Farouk, who was accompanied to the ring by Sonny. Because I guess the body Donnas didn't work. But no, Ron Simmons was like a beast back in the day. The guy looked awesome.
Oh yeah, he was a beast. I mean, this is around the time where he won the World Heavyweight Championship.
Yep. And the thing is, you put him in the ring with a guy like Mr. Hughes, like it just like accentuates the fact that the guy is insane, insanely explosive. Yeah. It was an explosive match. Like Hughes was clowned through the whole thing, in my opinion.
Oh yeah. Our next match features the Super Invader, a.k.a. formerly known as the Mighty Hercules, with Harley Race, versus Todd Champion.
What a waste of Harley Race coming out. guy was like Hall of Fame material in 1992, and they have him coming out with Hercules. My God.
Not just Hercules, Hercules in a big red mask.
Oh, Lucha Hercules, excuse me. This match sucked.
Even the powerbomb sucked at the end.
Are you kidding me? There's nothing in this match that I can say was good. This was a cool-down match. This is before they had... I guess this was before they had women's wrestling.
Oh.
To cool off after good matches.
Yeah.
Shit match. I don't even care.
Well, next was Big Josh, a.k.a. Matt Bourne, a.k.a. Doink the Clown, versus formerly one half of the Rock and Roll Express, Richard Morton.
This was an okay match. And it reminds me that these guys were good wrestlers, despite the fact that, you know, they never were anywhere near a world championship caliber material, but they were good. It was a nice hoss match, like a lot of big rights and lefts, a lot of slams. My only complaint is an ass drop finisher. Yeah, the Northern Exposure. Yeah, we mentioned Mojo Rawley earlier in the show. I still hate ass drop finishers unless you're a big fat guy. Like Earthquake, or Typhoon, or Rikishi.
Or Tugboat.
Or Yokozuna.
Or if you're the Shockmaster.
Further proof that WCW almost ruins everything. I like this match for what it was, though.
Too bad Bill Alfonso actually almost... did botch the 1-2-3.
Yeah.
He did. and then he hits the leg, and everybody's looking like, what the fuck happened?
Yeah.
And, oh, he won. I'm like, okay.
Okay, you should count to three next time.
Yeah. Well, our next match is for the WCW Light Heavyweight Champion, featuring the champion Brian Pillman versus the Z-Man.
No, Flying Brian versus Z-Man. Though you couldn't tell because Jim Ross and Ventura were calling him Brian Pillman through the whole match.
Yeah.
In the same way JR calls Mick Foley, Mick Foley, no matter what persona he's in. This was a nice match. And yeah, I'm not a big Pillman guy. Never have been.
I enjoyed this. This is my third favorite match of the night.
I can pretty much agree with that, though. I'm not a big Pillman guy, but this was a good match.
You know, I really enjoyed this match. It was a great back and forth.
I think the thing that took me out of it is it seems like there was a good storyline attached to it. But because, you know, it's a pay-per-view and it didn't have those WWE-style recap videos, I couldn't get into the conflict there seemed to be between Z-Man and Pillman.
Yeah.
It seemed like there was a good rivalry there that I would have been more invested in the match if I had, you know, good knowledge of it.
Yeah.
Great match. It was well structured, great pace, lots of great, you know, cruiserweight moves, especially for 1992.
Yeah. Absolutely. And great finish, by the way.
Yeah, awesome finish.
Where it's the Z-Man goes for the flying crossbody and Pillman avoids it, and then rolls them up.
Yeah, and then flips them over. It wasn't like a roll-up. It wasn't a small package roll-up. He flips them out. He bends the legs back, puts the bridge up, 1, 2, 3. That was awesome. That was a great finish.
Oh, you know, I think this is the point where they started to turn him heel, and that's really sort of like a heel move right there.
Yeah, like you capitalize on the, like, innocent mistake.
Yeah.
And we mentioned that earlier in the show as well, with a guy like Tyler Breeze who did that.
Absolutely.
And again, it goes, I feel like it's a good thing we covered TakeOver to compare it to an old school kind of wrestling feel.
Yep. Yep. Our next match is a match I think we can both agree was match of the goddamn night. That would be the Steiner Brothers.
I don't think it's match of the night, but...
For me, it's match of the night.
Wow, that's some. Oh, you're gonna have a fight on your hands. We're working up.
The Steiner brothers of Rick and Scott versus Tatsumi Fujinami and Takayuki Iizuka for the number one.
I thought I would have to say Japanese names on the show, Thomas.
Only I do. for the number one contendership for the IWGP Tag Team Championship.
And for those who are not familiar with the IWGP Tag Team Championship, it's the tag team championship that's defended in New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Yep.
Also worth mentioning that the Steiner Brothers were the WCW World Tag Team Champions. Their titles were not on the line.
Mm-hmm.
I should also mention, I do not like the Steiner Brothers.
Oh, you don't?
No. I don't like old school Scott Steiner or current Scott Steiner. I don't like Rick Steiner either. I think both of them come off like complete utter like garbage. I don't like them in the ring. I don't like their mic work. I can't believe these guys are multiple time tag team champions.
Well, they were good tag team wrestlers, especially in their early careers.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And it makes it, like, so much worse that they make, you know, they make Scott Steiner a star, and they make Rick Steiner look like a complete friggin' joke.
Mm-hmm.
All I gotta say is Judy Bagwell in a pole match, anyone? Oh, yeah! Oh, let's not forget Rick Steiner and Judy Bagwell were the tag team champions in late WCW. Did I mention WCW ruins everything?
Okay, but that wasn't late WCW.
No, this is early WCW. I don't care for the Steiner brothers. I thought Fujinami and Iizuka were awesome, though.
But you know, that's part of the reason is that this seemed like a match that we would see later in WWE and WCW as far as being a good match with all the suplexes and the flying maneuvers.
A lot of top rope action. I didn't hate this match. The only thing that drug it down for me is I don't like the Steiner brothers at all. I can't.
Well, I like the early Steiner brothers, so for me, I thought it was a great match, and I enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it for what it was. It is one of the better matches of the night, don't get me wrong. I like it a lot better than Super Invader versus Todd Champion. I like it better than Rick Morton versus Josh. You know, is it my kind of match? No, and I'm going to freely admit I did not care for it as much as I wanted to, and I gave it a fair shot, and I didn't care for the match.
I really enjoyed the finish, though.
The finish was probably the best part of the match.
The suplex, the belly-to-belly suplex off the top rope.
That was a killer suplex.
Yes, it was. And that's what the Steiner brothers were great at.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. That's why this Frankensteiner is named after them, because they had great stiff moves.
Mm-hmm.
That looked vicious. The only problem is you screw up a stiff move like that, you just ended someone's career.
Yep.
You end a guy's career if you screw that up. But
they didn't really screw it up that often.
Yeah. Apparently they had a 133% chance of winning. Do you remember when Pearl Harbor bombed the Germans? Well, do you remember when Hitler bombed the Japanese? Sorry, I'm trying to create Scott Steinerisms on the fly. Just not working.
No, you're just creating Animal House. Because it seems like Scott Steiner came out of Animal House. Our final match for the evening is the War Games match versus Sting Squadron, which featured Sting, Barry Windham, Dustin Rhodes, before he'd become Goldust.
The natural Dustin Rhodes.
Ricky Steamboat and Nikita Koloff versus the Dangerous Alliance of Paulie Dangerously.
Well, let's mention, you know, Paulie Dangerously and Medusa were not wrestling.
Well, Medusa does get involved in the match in a way, climbing up the cage, yeah, but we'll get to that.
She does.
But featuring stunning Steve Austin, the ravishing Rick Rude, the enforcer Arm Anderson, the beautiful Bobby Eaton, and the cruncher Larry Zbysko.
You know what was fun about this match for me?
Austin, actually watching Larry Zbysko wrestle.
Well, besides that, Austin had hair. Steve Austin had hair. Long blonde hair.
Oh, it wasn't long blonde hair. It was short blonde hair, but I think you're confusing him with Eaton.
No. Not long, long. I mean long as in compared to a bald guy.
Long. Long as compared to a bald guy.
You know, enough for him to, you know, throw on a bandana and impersonate Hulk Hogan.
No, that would be Barry Windham.
Good point.
Because he had the yellow trunks and the long, the blonde hair with the balding spot. I'm like, there's a moment where him and Steve Austin are like, is that Hogan? Oh, that's Barry Windham.
Now, one thing I need to point out about this match is I forgot what a complete and utter clusterfuck the rules for War Games are.
They are.
And the setup, I might add. Like, the two-ring setup for anything that's not a War Games match is just weird.
Yeah. But, you know, it was a pretty good match, and it was entertaining all the way through.
This is my match of the night, by the way.
This is my second match of the night.
You may save face with the people who will be sending hate mail your way.
Just like the people who will be sending hate mail to you about, you know, Mojo Rawley?
That's true. But like I said, keep in mind that this is like the last WCW match to ever get a 5-star rating out of, what's-his-face?
Dave Meltzer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the last WCW match. And that's in 1992, so that's pretty sad for WCW, because they had some interesting matches after that, even through the Cluster F era. But again, like, War Games is a complete and utter clusterfuck, and I know, like, it was invented to kind of compete with Survivor Series.
Yeah.
As a concept.
I mean, that's why, I mean, when you look at the fact that they would end up moving the War Games to Fall Brawl.
Oh, yeah. Instead of in May, which...
Yeah. It would be in September, which is a couple months before Survivor Series.
Yep.
But, you know, it was fun. I love the entries, because first you had Steve Austin.
Well, the thing about it is you had world-class talent.
Yeah.
Past, present, and future world-class talent all around that ring. I can't think of too many guys. I can't think of anyone who was physically in the match who was not just epic later.
Oh, yeah.
Or before, you know.
And who was an epic? Everybody in the match was epic.
Yeah.
I mean, you had... It started off with Austin and Windham, and they went 10 minutes, and it was really good.
That was excellent.
And you had the moment where, okay, it's over, and we're going to do the coin flip. And Steve's like, heads, it's tails, go. And they send in Ravishing Rick Rude.
Rick Rude.
And, you know, he was good. And then the next person to come in is Steamboat. And he's awesome.
Yep.
And he holds his own. And then comes in Arn Anderson. And he's awesome. And then comes in Dustin Rhodes, and he's awesome.
Well, here's the thing I like about War Games is there's a build-up.
It's a build-up.
If you put in the right talent for War Games, and you have that build-up, it's awesome. Because, like, if I remember correctly, the last guy in the match is Sting himself.
No.
Nope.
Next is then Larry Zbysko, then comes Sting,
okay. Then
Bobby Eaton comes in, and Nikolai Koloff was the last person. Because the whole thing was, can they trust him? Will he work with Sting? And that was the whole big thing, is that he does work with Sting.
Yeah. It's Zbysko who screws up
is, you have this thing to where they're taking apart the ring, and they're doing it because they want to get that big pipe. And Eaton's holding Sting, and Zbysko's supposed to hit him, and he misses and hits Eaton in the arm. Sting knocks Zbysko out. I think it's Steamboat who comes to hold Zbysko as Sting puts him in the arm bar, and Eaton surrenders.
That's the other thing that's, like, goofy about this match, is it's one with a friggin' arm bar.
Hold two! Arm bar!
No, I'm more thinking about... The spoony ones.
Well, you expected it to be the Scorpion Deathlock.
Yeah, I was about to say. Like, I was about to say, Sting had a submission maneuver, which was a Scorpion Deathlock. Why not just use that? I'm thinking back to the spoony ones review of the WrestleMania VCR game, where one of the moves you can use to win the game is an armbar. Oh, no, it was a chin lock. No, it wasn't an armbar. It was an equally like ineffective move. It was a chin lock. And the irony of that is the week after was NXT Arrival, and Cesaro wins one of the decisions with a headlock, basically choking. Not even tapping out.
That could have been Arrival, because Arrival was one fall to the finish. And he won the neutral.
Then it was the 2 out of 3 falls then.
Yeah, it was the 2 out of 3.
Arrival. It was the 2 out of 3 falls that led to that eventual match. It was the 2 out of 3 falls. My bad.
It wasn't a chin lock. It was a sleeper hold. To be fair.
No, it didn't look like a sleeper.
But it was supposed to be a sleeper.
It was a chin lock, because they even called it as a chin lock. Commentary called it as a chin lock. Because, like, Regal's going on and on about how it can cut off the oxygen. It's not necessarily a sleeper. Like, Regal went into the whole psychology. It was a chin lock.
They called it a sleeper hold on SmackDown and Raw.
Well, that's Cole and JBL. I was about to say, a sleeper, you know, they didn't call it that. But, again, it's like a mundane move wins the match. It just felt weird. Yeah.
No, I understand. That's different. I mean, you had the point where Medusa climbs up the mat, the ring, to throw Paulie Dangerously's cell phone into the cage. And for you kids today, you may not think that sounds like that could be a weapon. This is the 1992 version of the cell phone, where it was built like a fucking brick.
Well, what you do is you put in Paul Heyman into an image search, and you look for ones where he looks a lot younger, and he's holding this big, huge gray block with what looks like an antenna coming out of it. That's what cell phones looked like 20 years ago.
Yep.
And back then, Paul had a mullet, you know. business in the front, streak in the back.
Mm-hmm.
No one gets the pun?
I get it.
Speaking of Heyman, by the way, I got to mention this. Even back in the day, Paul Heyman could talk about complete and utter bullshit and make it sound like the most important thing ever. He's got like a map and everything out there, and he's pointing.
I was about to bring that up.
And he's like,
I love.
He's got like all his guys around the map. He's like, all right, here is what we're going to do. We're going to do this and this thing. And if we win the coin toss, Rick Rude is going in, and blah, 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 blah.
And if they win the contest, we got to get him over to this corner. And yeah, it's like, it's like, I love that moment to where he's like the head coach, and he's like got a game plan, and like he's on the chalkboard, and all right, fellas, this is what we're going to do.
It's like the most mundane, utter bullshit, but he makes it sound completely important.
Oh, yeah.
And the best part is, like, he still does that on Raw or SmackDown with Lesnar, and he did it with Cesaro. And it was Curtis Axel, Ryback, CM Punk, RVD. He did it with everybody, you know, even in the later days, which I think is amazing. Like, there's a point where he goes out of the ring to kind of berate Cole, JBL, and King, but it's only an opportunity to get him out of the ring so Jack Swagger can blindside him.
Yep.
Or blindside Cesaro. I thought that was perfect. It was kind of fun and enjoyable in a way. But again, I just had to point that out. Like, the importance of the manager back in the day is unparalleled. And that's another countdown, by the way, I can recommend. No, Legends of Wrestling. I can't remember.
I don't know if there's Best Manager. I know there's a Best Faction.
Okay, that's probably Legends of Wrestling, where they talk about.
Yeah.
I know it's one of these where they talk about, like, the importance of, they did, like, Best Managers or something. Or, you know what? It might not have been a countdown. It's a DVD. Somebody sent this my way, because it was hosted by Todd freaking Grisham.
Who now works for ESPN.
Yeah, that's weird. I hope they stop stealing. Well, no, they can keep Todd Grisham. I want Coach back.
Yes, I was about to say that. I love it whenever he's on Mike and Mike. You know, I remember the last time he was on Mike and Mike, he was actually, I think, guest hosting for Mike Greenberg, and someone asked him a question. Like, someone actually sent the question, like, "What was the worst thing you ever had to do in the WWE?" And he brought up a botched Batista bomb that he had to do.
Oh, yeah. He actually brings that up in interviews, too.
Yeah.
Botched Batista bomb. That can't... That never happens.
Well, that's it for the matches. So, I guess the two question remains are, what are your top three matches of the night?
That's kind of... Well, obviously, the main event, Sting Squadron versus Dangerous Alliance. I think it had everything. It had, when you put that much world-class talent in the ring, you can't help but have awesome matches. You know, you had the present and future of professional wrestling in that ring. Some of those guys are actually still kicking some ass.
Yeah.
One of those guys is still kicking some ass.
That would be Goldust.
That'd be Dustin Rhodes.
And, you know, if things work out with Sting... maybe soon Sting.
They're not putting him in a ring. Tell you right now. We're not seeing Sting. We're not seeing Hogan. We're not seeing Angle in a WWE ring wrestling ever again. But then again, most of these guys are, you know, some of these guys are still, you know, Legends contracts working in the back. Guys like Arn Anderson, you know, they're still having an impact on the industry, on the business. They're doing what's best for business.
And, of course, Steve Austin is laying the smackdown on the podcasting business.
Oh, man, I love the Steve Austin show.
I do, too.
Like, I just went in to see what it was like. I ended up listening to his episode with Heyman. And the first half of that episode is him talking about the dang rats on his ranch. And it is the funniest damn thing I've ever heard.
Have you listened yet to the episode where he talks with, not Jim Crockett, oh, God. I'm blanking. Because that's what I do, is I blank on people's names.
Yeah.
No, not Jim Crockett, I think. Not Jim Crockett. I
almost want to go back and listen to the one where he's got Bischoff.
it's... Because
he doesn't sound like a goon in interviews.
You continue. I'll look it up.
Yeah, you look it up. What was my other... I would definitely say Pillman versus Z-Man. I like that match.
Mm-hmm.
I really did. And I would put the Steiner brothers versus Fujinami and Iizuka at 3.
Yeah.
Almost tied with Tracy and Mark Marrow there.
Yep.
I would say that's about where it's at.
Jim Cornette, that was the name of
it. Oh, Cornette.
Yeah, he does an episode with Cornette. That's hilarious.
I would say if there's any guy who could rein in Cornette in an interview, it's Stone Cold Steve Austin, even over Skype.
Well, you know, and I actually have the same three matches. Number three is Pillman and the Z-Man. Number two is the War Games match, and for me, the Steiner match is number one. So I think we just have a reverse order there for one and two. I think
most people will say those are their favorite matches. I think the only real stinker out of the whole thing, though, is Super Invader versus Todd Champion.
Yeah.
Total waste of a legend, too.
Yeah.
If favorite it makes moments. You feel any better, I said the same thing when they had Ric Flair coming out with Miz. And I like Miz. That's going to get mail, too.
Yeah, that is. So what are your favorite moments of the pay-per-view?
I think I mentioned most of them as we went through the matches.
Well, timing top three.
The thing about this is there aren't a lot of spots to point out.
Yeah.
But I would say in moments, I would say the ending to the War Games match was a great spot. Like, that was explosive. I also didn't know you only had to make one guy submit to win the whole match. I thought you had to make all the guys submit.
No, it was just one.
Yeah, I know. Again, War Games rules are just convoluted to me. I would say I would say Cactus Jack attacking Junkyard Dog.
Yeah.
That was some old school awesomeness. And I would say the ending to the Steiner Brothers match.
Oh, absolutely.
If I had to pick spots.
Number three would be, again, Cactus Jack's.
By the way, mine's in elbow. No particular order.
Yeah. For me, number three is Cactus Jack's elbow off the top rope. Number two is actually the Steiner suplex off the top rope. But my number one is, and they do it twice in the War Games match. The first time, Barry Windham has Arn Anderson. And he has his head between the rings.
Oh, where they got him. That? Yeah, where they're kind of scraping him on the.
Well, he's like jamming him up and down through between the rings. I was like, it's hilarious.
Well, I'm sure Wyndham did that to Steve Austin as well.
Oh, no, he may have done Steve Austin as, and then Arn Anderson. Arn Anderson or Zabisco or. Or maybe it was, I can't remember who they did it to. Either Rude or Zabisco, I think. But Steamboat and Sting did it to somebody.
Yeah.
And they were like, Steamboat and Sting are trying to make a wish!
Oh, that sounds like a Ventura line if I ever heard one.
No, that was Ross.
That was JR? Wow, that sounded more like something Ventura would say.
Oh, by the way, and we've got to mention... Ventura keeps mentioning something that he had on Beats Blast throughout the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
I went ahead and looked at it. It was a bikini contest.
Yeah, well, that's kind
of
what he was...
That's one of the most bullshit bikini contests, because Medusa comes out, and by the way, Medusa had the better bikini.
Yeah, I'm just saying, that's what it was. That's what the hint felt like anyway. I'm like, it's going to be some bullshit wet t-shirt. Well, not wet t-shirt, because it was 1992, but bikini contest seemed to
be right. No, but the reason I call bullshit is because Miss High's bikini, because there's a story like, they took my bikini, and then she takes a scarf. And she comes out with a bikini made out of Ventura's scarf. And I'm like, fuck you. There's no way she made a bikini out of that scarf in 2 seconds.
Oh, wow. This is like an interesting... honestly enough, this is almost an interesting card in itself. it's a lot of like the same matches, though.
Are you looking at Beach Blast?
Yeah. I'm actually looking at this, and I'm like, this probably wasn't a bad pay-per-view. Except
no, you had Scotty, you had Raven defeating Pillman for the light heavyweight title. You had Simmons versus Terry Taylor. Red Rooster. You had Greg Valentine versus Marcus Badwell.
Valentine wins, by the way.
You had Hyatt versus Medusa in a bikini contest.
With Heyman.
By the way, this was Sting versus Cactus Jack, the Fall Count Anywhere match.
Yep.
That's a very famous match.
Non-title match, by the way.
Yeah.
And by the way, another thing I liked about old school wrestling was the fact that the title didn't... You could have your world champion not always put the title on the line. Having the world champion defending the title was a big deal.
Yep.
Unlike, now.
You had Steamboat versus Ruin and Iron Man Challenge. You had Dustin Rhodes, Wyndham, and Koloff versus the Dangerous Alliance of Anderson, Austin, and Eaton. And I guess the main event was
Steiner's the versus WCW. Miracle Violence Connection.
Which is Terry Gordy and Steve Williams.
Steve Williams. He's gonna put the mask on. Sorry. That's one of my favorite like heel JR moments. And it was on Sunday Night Heat. They had this guy, Tiger Ali Singh, who would go out and he would take guys out of the audience. And he would give them like $100 to do something, you know, embarrassing or stupid. On Sunday Night Heat one time, he decided to go ahead and pull someone in the audience to impersonate Jim Ross, who was heel managing Dr. Death Steve Williams. Because he, you know, they had him in a stupid gimmick. And JR blasts it, so he becomes the heel manager for Dr. Death Steve Williams. He's going all Oklahoma Pride and everything. Which is the second time they've had JR ever be heel in WWE. The first time was when he brought out the fake Diesel and the fake Razor Ramon.
Uh-huh.
But he comes out, Dr. Death nails him with, I forget what Steve Williams' finisher was at the time, but it was like some kind of massive bomb.
Yeah,
and like what sold it for me was commentary, and you had who's that fat pudgy guy they had on commentary in the mid 90s Rock always ribbed this guy worse than Cole.
I can't remember.
He's working for ROH right now. I forget the name. I'm going to get hate mail. The other guy was Shane McMahon.
Yeah.
Who's flipping out like a schoolgirl over this crap. Like, the guy's getting the ever-loving crap beaten out of him, and Shane McMahon is, like, jumping and giggling like a little girl. I'm like, that's selling it for me. The only other guy in commentary who could sell this to me would be the other guy who's in the ring, and that's Jim Ross.
Well, you know, it's just actually interesting, and before we go into, you know, ratings, I'll bring this up. I just watched the Legend of Wrestling episode on the NWO. And Steve and Kevin Nash actually brings up the night that they debuted the fake Ramon and fake Diesel, and how the WWE was promoting it like they're coming back, and how the lawyers at WCW like were panicked because they were in non-binding contracts. So like, what are you doing? Like, what? And so they made them sign these binding contracts for way much more money. And then there comes the moment where they're watching it and it's happening, and they're like, they're in the TV truck as it's going down with the lawyer, and the lawyer looks at the TV screen, looks at them, looks at the TV screen, and looks at them, and goes, shit.
Yeah, they like Hall and Nash made so much money on that.
Yeah.
And they didn't have
and
to
I
do
don't blame
a damn
them
thing.
Either. I don't blame them anymore for it.
No, like the reason they got a lot of money was because the people at WCW were morons.
Yep.
It was great. Then again, I did not like Kane as the fake Diesel, though. I guess it was better than Isaac Yankum.
I guess. But with that, I guess it's time for ratings. So what do you rate this pay-per-view?
Overall?
Yeah.
I would say it's an 8 out of 10. You know, the main event is the one thing that people take away from the pay-per-view. Some fans like you will also take away the Steiner Brothers match as well.
Yeah.
I took away great cruiserweight matches that just kept you in your seat as you go, but a lot of lacking talent, like Morton versus Josh, Invader versus Champion, boring matches. It was Ron Simmons that carried his match against Hughes. The outside the ring stuff was almost more interesting than the match.
Yeah.
You know,
Flamingo carried Bagwell. Bad carried Smothers.
Yeah. Not that I didn't think Tracy Smothers was that bad, but you are more or less correct. Freebirds versus Terry Taylor and Greg the Hammer Valentine. These were guys on the way out as it was. These were guys who were ready to retire in a couple of years. So yeah. I understand why they were the opening match. It's not a bad match, but, you know.
Yeah.
It wasn't something that, like, opened up the show for me and said, oh my gosh, this is awesome.
Yeah.
I would say overall it's a 7 or 8 out of 10.
Yeah. For me, it's a 3. Go ahead.
No, come on. I'm done.
I was going to say it was a 3 out of 5 for me as well. It's above average, but, you know, most of the matches, even the ones that are good, they're not, like, impressive and, like, memorable and everything. You really watch this pay-per-view, and more than just being impressed by most of the matches, you're more impressed by, like, oh, this guy's going to be this guy later, or this guy was this guy.
Well, keep in mind, go through the matches right now and realize how many of these guys end up leaving the company.
Yeah.
Michael, there's a guy in every match who leaves WCW for WWE. Match one, it's Michael Hayes. Match two, it's Johnny B. Badd. Match three, it's Scotty Flamenco. Zoe went to ECW first. Match four, it's Ron Simmons. And Cactus Jack pretty quickly as well.
You didn't have a match with Super Invader and Todd Champion. They didn't go to WWE.
No, yeah, they didn't go anywhere. But I mean, like, that's the...
The match after that, Big Josh, Doink the Clown. The next match, Brian Pillman. Next match.
Steiners. Now, I can't remember if they went to WWF at this point for a short stint, or they had a short stint before this.
I think they may have had a short stint before this, and then they were WCW all the way through.
Okay, because I know the Steiner Brothers at one time were in WWF. I just can't remember which way it was.
Yeah. And then the War Games match. Let's count the ways.
Austin.
Dustin Rhodes, Goldust, Stone Cold Steve Austin. Arn Anderson, though he would be after he retired.
No, it wouldn't even be until after Vince buys WCW.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Arn Anderson was an executive producer of Nitro.
Yeah.
before he became executive producer of Raw.
Yeah. Ricky the Dragon Steamboat.
Yep.
Yep. Rick Rude would go back.
He goes back and then goes back again.
Well, no, he goes back and then he goes to ECW, I believe.
No, because this is infamous. Remember when Raw was pre-taped?
Yeah.
He appeared on Raw on the pre-tape and then appeared live on Nitro in the same night.
Oh, that's right.
When he was
right.
Managing DX, which consisted of China, Triple H, and Shawn Michaels.
That's
when he carried around the big heavy case.
Yeah. Well, I just also remember the point to where he also is on ECW in 97. I do remember it. In fact,
yep, that's 97, though. That's that also was when they weren't doing binding contracts either. You know, look at Mike Awesome.
Good. I hope he does a suicide dive, and it's too bad he didn't succeed in taking his own life.
Oh, by the way, someone sent me a clip of him winning the WWF Hardcore Championship during the invasion. I was sad. I'm like, you got a whole bunch of other ECW guys who would better represent that thing than Mike fucking Awesome.
Though, have you seen his match with Tajima Nojima on ECW Heatwave 1998?
No, I know the guy can wrestle, but I feel like there was, at the time, considering he was mired in controversy, there was a better guy in the Alliance to take it.
But
Not that gimmick was any good.
Watch his match on Heatwave 1998. It was like the third best match of the night for me.
No, I'm not saying the guy's a bad wrestler.
I know, but I'm just saying...
There were better talent to make that impact with during that critical, crappy invasion storyline.
I'm just saying, that may be the best Mike Awesome match you'll ever see.
And it's the third match of the night. You're selling it to me.
Well, that was the same night that had Bam Bam Bigelow versus Taz.
Survive if I let you. Remember when Taz used to be a badass, not a bumbling goof on Impact?
Poor Taz.
There's a reason that Botchamania has a segment called Insipid Taz Commentary.
Yep. Well, that is it for this episode. Gene, thank you for coming on. You want to pimp Shaft?
Shaftplus.com. Check it out if you like anime.
And other things, because they do talk about other things, like, you know, how I ruined their lives.
Yeah. We actually have a hashtag. It's called Thomas Ruins Everything. Hashtag Thomas Ruins Everything. Feel free to use it.
Oh, that thing's going to get worn out more than a hoe on payday.
I thought you were going to make a Godfather joke.
That is a Godfather joke.
Well,
Eddie,
shrimping ain't easy.
Well, and of course, remember, if you have any comments or emails or anything you want to say about this show or upcoming shows, which, again, I'm going to reveal next month's schedule for you at the end. Remember, there are several ways you can contact the show. One, you can contact the email account at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also contact us on Stitcher, as we are now on Stitcher. You can contact us. Follow our account on Stitcher at www.stitcher.com. Search for the Absolution Network there. You can also leave us a comment on our Facebook page, which you can find at www.facebook.com and search for the Absolution Network. And, of course, you can always leave a comment on the website itself, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. Of course, make sure you check out all the other 132 Productions content, including the Shaft Plus podcast with Gene and Chris. Everything right here on the
episode. You don't even listen to our show. Scab, I'm calling you out.
Wait. What?
You said Gene and Chris. You're forgetting someone.
Okay, yes, there's Lucid, but you guys admit you're not. Lucid's not on every show. He's on some of the shows.
When we discuss nonsense, we don't have Lucid on. When we discuss important stuff, we have Lucid on.
Okay.
He's a regular fixture of Shaft Plus.
You know what? You are right. I'll be fair. I will include Lucid in that comment. So you can listen to Gene, Chris, and Lucid over at the Shaft.
Because, like, Neo Kagi pulled that crap and we took him to task. I'm going to do the same to you.
I'm sorry. You're right.
Good. I'll make sure Lucid calls off the locusts.
Make sure you check out all the other 132 production content that, of course, includes to my Tom's Prerogative, the brand new anime cast, and, of course, Edwin's new Mega Mix podcast. Of course, you also have the Comic Book Crazy Podcasting Network, features CM Juice, Comic Book Crazy, Hexcast, and Spectacular Webs, which you can find at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And, of course, my Godzilla podcast, Tokyo SOS, which you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. Make sure you check out all our friends on the sidebar of the site. And for upcoming CMG's wrestling reviews, next month is King of the Ring month. All month we will be reviewing King of the Ring pay-per-views. So starting next week, if I can get it out before the anime convention I'm going to anime next, I will be reviewing the very first King of the Ring 1993. The week after that, it will be King of the Ring 1996. The week after that, it will be King of the Ring 2001. All saving up for the big finale where I'm going to have tons of guests on the last week of June. And that will be King of the Ring 1998. Yeah. I need to get a ton of people for that pay-per-view. So that is the upcoming schedule for CMG's Wrestling Reviews. So Gene, thank you once again.
Thank you for having me.
And until next time, my wrestling fans, I want you to remember one goddamn thing about me. CM Jew. I'm the best Jew in the world!
You're all that I have and you're all that I need. Each and every day I pray to get to know you. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around, all around, bring me down to negativity. But I believe, yes, I believe, I say that I believe. I stand on two feet, one big blood down on one knee. I fight with all of my might to get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Out of darkness comes light, twilight, and through the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of through the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. I give myself to you from the essence of my being, and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be holding a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being, and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Stripping away the legs and reveal your soul. You gotta give yourself up, and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself, and I don't even know. I'm gonna live that fast life, but you're dreaming.